Our next guest says up to 60% of the cases they work on are post-judgment issues. That means that after the divorce is final, someone wants to go back to the table or maybe to court to change the divorce agreement they signed. Can they do that? And if so, what's involved in terms of time, money, and reasons for the modification? Well, joining us to explain is Christopher Castellano, senior counsel at the law firm of Joseph Greenwald and Lake. Christopher has a wealth of experience in drafting pre- and postnuptial agreements, separation agreements. He's handled many complex divorce matters, business valuations, spousal and child support, property division, and modifications. Christopher, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, divorce agreements are created to cover all areas, such as financial and all matters pertaining to the children. In your professional opinion and experience, what more should people be including in these documents so it lessens the exposure to go back?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. You know, one would say it's like a $1 million question, because when you enter into the process of creating some of these agreements, and we're talking specifically about entering into an agreement and not, you know, looking at evaluating, you know, modifying a court order that you get from a going through a trial. So if we're looking just at the agreement, you're looking at, okay, let's establish a baseline. That's what I like to explain to clients, that the first round of dispute here is establishing that baseline, especially when it comes to custody matters. You know, a lot of the times, you know, most of our post-judgment actions that we see relates to custody, custody modifications, custody enforcement actions, et cetera. And so you really have to look at when you're doing your first round, when you're establishing your agreement, your separation agreement, you know, how can we get a good default situation for the parties and for your client specifically, and then, you know, the various different issues will crop out from there.
So after a person signs their agreement and it is entered into the court, they are officially divorced, can they and are they allowed to violate terms of the agreement? And if so, is that another reason for somebody to have to go back?
Well, they certainly, oftentimes, you have situations where they violate. In the event that they do violate their agreement, you know, that is something that the other side would, you know, go to the violating party and say, listen, you're in breach of the agreement. You're in, you know, violation or contempt of the order. And that's how you develop that type of post-judgment action. You know, if you're not looking at an appeal of your court order, in the post-judgment world, you're looking at, you know, contempt action, like you said, if someone violates the agreement or the order. You're looking at an enforcement action. So again, someone's in breach and you're trying to enforce specific terms of the agreement, and a modification. There are a few others, but those are your big three when it comes to a post-judgment action. And there's, you know, various different facts, various different standards that we have to look at, and pros and cons of going down each road. But oftentimes, you know, you may even want to do a blend of various different concepts. You know, you may want to be asking for a modification of custody while in the same vein you're asking that, you know, the other party be found in contempt. Because, frankly, if they're found in contempt of X, Y, and Z issue when it comes to, let's say, custody, then perhaps we need to argue to the court that we also need to modify the agreement going forward, because clearly, you know, the other side's not willing to follow the agreement.
Let's talk about if the payor, and that meaning the person who's going the person who's responsible for things such as child support and or alimony, let's say their income changes. And I don't know, we'll use a couple different variations. They got a huge bump in salary, maybe a pay cut, maybe they were let go from a job. Is this an example of a post-judgment matter that somebody can bring to their lawyer's attention or the court's attention?
And certainly. Anytime you have a situation where in Maryland, where I practice, you would have what's called a material change in circumstance. So for instance, like you referenced the, you know, a significant pay bump or a loss in pay, loss of employment, anything that would be considered a material change from the circumstances that were in play at the time you entered into the agreement, you know, that would be something that we look at to see how can we change the circumstances? How can we change the agreement to deal with this new situation? And of course, there's always going to be, you know, specific facts that may allow that or not allow that. You know, in the world of spousal support, for instance, some agreements may say that, you know, alimony or spousal support is non-modifiable, right? Some may say it's modifiable only in specific instances. Some may not be, may not have any clause about whether or not it's modifiable. It just depends on every specific case. In Maryland, for child support is always modifiable. And so when a client walks through the door saying, you know, I understand that, you know, my ex, the parent has received a new job and they're making about, you know, 25%+ more than they did at the time of the agreement. Well, that's something that we're going to look at to see if there's a justified case to modify child support.
Let's take this even a step further, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, okay, there's a change in circumstances, or I don't feel like doing this anymore. And everybody just says, okay, we're going to go change everything and mix it all up. But for anybody who may face a post-judgment matter or even consider a post-judgment issue that they want to bring to the other side, can you describe or give some sort of range of a time frame and a cost that doing this could involve?
Right. Post-judgment matters are difficult. And the reason why I say they are difficult is because, you know, when you have your original agreement, you're looking, like I said, at establishing a baseline. You're going to deal with specific instances and unique circumstances to that family, but you don't know what could go wrong. We can anticipate as much as we can. You know, if it were up to some lawyers, we would have agreements that are 50 pages that deal with every possible circumstance, but that's generally not terribly reasonable. And so we try to you know, minimize the agreements down to be something that's workable for these individuals. But when you fast forward and you realize, okay, this pickup drop up time is really not working. It's not working for the kid. It's problematic. They're not able to get to, you know, their band or sports practice or whatever it may be, and we need a modification. Or, you know, they're routinely picking the kid up an hour and a half late on their, you know, their Sunday exchanges, for instance. It's these disputes that we look at in a post-judgment world to try to modify. But because it's a more specific analysis, meaning we're looking at not the whole picture, but these very, very specific issues from that big picture, the tensions are often a little bit higher. And people are maybe a little less willing to move from their positions. And so you oftentimes have a bit more of a difficult case. So you have, you know, the costly reality of attorney's fees throughout all these various different disputes that go on for the length of the litigation. If people are unwilling to move off of their positions, then that only means, you know, continuing, you know, attorney's fees charges, expert charges, et cetera.
If a person does have to go back for a post-judgment matter with an ex-spouse, is it more cost-efficient to use the same legal counsel because they are so familiar with the case?
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for institutional knowledge. You know, I have a number of clients that, you know, I've had for quite a while. And, you know, I know their case. I was there from the beginning, and I'm there throughout their second or third post-judgment action. You know, in some circumstances, you have a situation where perhaps the client wasn't a huge fan of how the first round of litigation went, and so they want to look in a different way. And that's perfectly okay. You know, lawyers are they're trained to look at the facts as they are, and you don't require that built-in institutional knowledge. But there's something to be said for having that, because you understand, you know, okay, I understand what was said during that mediation back in October of 5 years ago, or I understand, you know, what that Pendente-Lite hearing involved and how that plays into the dispute that we have today. So some of that is useful. That's not to say that it's required, but it does help.
Depending on the issue that people have to go back for, can that other side ask for attorney fees?
It certainly depends on the agreement. In a lot of our agreements, we have clauses that say that, you know, a defaulting or breaching party is responsible for attorney fees. And so it may be an increased chance to get attorney's fees, which itself may be an incentive to, you know, going back to your prior question of the length and cost of litigation, may incentivize some bad actors to continue the litigation just so they can get attorney's fees. But all this plays into the whole dynamic of a post-judgment case, and why in oftentimes it's a bit more of a complicated matter than even the first divorce action, even if there's much less issues involved.
Christopher, for people who want to learn more, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, certainly. Joseph Greenwald and Lake. We are located in Rockville, Maryland and Greenbelt, Maryland. You can find me at jgllaw.com or 240-399-7900.
Christopher, thank you so much. We will be right back.
Christopher Castellano, attorney at law, stands as a pillar of strength and expertise in the field of family law. With a distinguished career at Joseph Greenwald & Lake, Castellano brings a depth of experience to his practice spanning a myriad of family law matters. What sets Christopher Castellano apart is his unwavering dedication to his clients, providing personalized attention and ethical representation in every case. Whether navigating complex divorces, delicate custody disputes, enforcement or modification actions, settlement negotiations, or intricate property divisions, Christopher Castellano's pragmatic approach and commitment to excellence shines through. His ability to deliver results with integrity and compassion has earned him the trust and respect of clients and peers alike. For those seeking legal counsel and steadfast advocacy in family matters, Christopher Castellano stands ready to provide expert guidance and support. Discover why Christopher Castellano is the go-to choice for those seeking expert counsel in family law by visiting jgllaw.com or call 240-399-7900. That's 240-399-7900.